Hello everyone and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast presented by NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project in collaboration with SocialWorks, a global forum helping organizations and nations navigate ecosystemic transformation. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping society, industry, the economy and policy, and reframing how we build for resilient futures. Today, we are examining the ways that dynamic systems of information, incentive, and interaction are reshaping societal systems of governance and network orchestration. Traditional boundaries and operating norms are being updated, being replaced with ecosystemic models, are new economic engines for the digital era. I'm your host today. I'm Marco Annunziata, co-founder of Annunziata and Desai Advisors. I'm an economics PhD and the former chief economist and head of business innovation strategy at General Electric. Prior to that, I worked in policy and finance, and my expertise lies at the intersection of global economic and financial trends with technology and innovation. My guest today, and my very welcome guest, is Amina Rasvi. Amina is a recognized leader in global sustainability, driving impactful change across the apparel and travel industries. As the Chief Partnerships and Development Officer at Travelist, a global nonprofit committed to making travel a force for good, Amina is leveraging her deep expertise in coalition building and industry collaboration from the apparel sector to accelerate sustainable progress in travel and tourism. Her ability to unite diverse stakeholders is helping the travel industry leapfrog ahead in aligning on credible, compliant, and consistent sustainability data that drive positive impact and responsible practices. Previously as CEO of the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, now Cascale, Amina served as a key leader in the apparel industry, ushering the development of the Higgs Index from its inception to the widespread adoption of the tools at more than 24,000 organizations worldwide. She was recognized for her leadership on the San Francisco Business Times 2023 list of influential women and featured in British Vogue's Women Leaders in Fashion Sustainable Revolution for elevating societal and social and environmental performance throughout the global apparel and textile industry. So welcome to the podcast, Amina. I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you so much, Marco. It's wonderful to be here.
You have a very impressive background that I've mentioned only a fraction of it. Is there anything else you want to flag to our audience before we start about who you are and your background?
Yeah, well, in addition to what you mentioned in terms of my current role at Travelist and my previous role at the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, now Cascale, I also spent 10 years at Gap Inc. working on environmental initiatives. So I have both a corporate and a profit background, but I'm also trained as an architect, and I know that's probably some of what we'll talk about a little bit later, but really thrilled to be here and to have this conversation.
Indeed. Awesome. So first of all, why don't you tell us what initially sparked your interest in sustainability and how did you enter the apparel and fashion industry? And then how have you landed in the travel and tourism industry? Because what I think is very interesting about you and your background is exactly that you are now in the transition between two very interesting industries, always with a sustainability lens.
Sure. So as I mentioned, I'm trained as an architect, and I think my interest in sustainability started when I was really young. I decided to become an architect actually at age 10. And it was to build housing for those who didn't have them. So I really approached kind of this broader idea of sustainability from a social justice lens. I went on to become an architect and practice, and I have always been interested not just in the social aspect of it, but then became increasingly interested in the environmental aspect of it, right? So the environmental impact of the built environment, the buildings that we construct and how we construct them. And so really sought to weave this together in terms of both my personal and professional kind of practice. And from there, I took a role at Gap Inc. where I was actually working on store design at the time. And what was interesting for me in that role was to think about how you could look at this company and address sustainability from a scale perspective, right? So not just working on one building at a time as an architect in a professional practice, but really looking at how you could look at multiple buildings or multiple projects at once and really start to understand the impact and scale that would have. And that was really interesting. And from there, moved into the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, now Cascale, really leveraging a lot of the work that I had done to think about, again, how do you look at sustainability at scale, not just in one company, but across multiple companies and across an industry as a whole. And now I've really leveraged that experience and I'm bringing that to the travel and tourism industry in my role at Travelist, which again is looking at how do you take lessons learned from one industry and port them over to another industry, right? Where are their similarities? Where are their differences? How can you leverage those lessons learned and really help another industry actually start to leapfrog, as you mentioned? So it's been a little bit of a winding journey, but a very interesting one, and one that I'm excited to bring all this expertise and experience to my new role into a new sector.
So to this point, what are some of the achievements that you are most proud of during the experience at Cascale, and achievements that you think actually hold some lessons that are portable now into different industries and probably not just travel?
Absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, my tenure at Cascale, there's so much to be proud of. When I took over as the CEO across 5 years, we were able to grow that coalition from 140 organizations to more than 300 organizations representing almost half of the industry. We were able to increase the scale of the team, grow it from almost 20 to 76 across 9 countries and more than double the revenue, and increase the scale and the usage of the tools there, the Higindex, to more than 20,000 organizations. And so that is only a fraction, I think, of what we were able to accomplish during that time. And there's a lot that I'm proud of. In terms of some of the lessons learned, I will say that collaboration is hard work. It's not easy when you talk about trying to look at some of these issues from a systems perspective and an ecosystem perspective across an industry, right? And so you are trying to bring partners and stakeholders along with you on this journey. And that's obviously not always is easy. It's often fraught with a lot of challenges in terms of the politics of it and the people and all of that. But yet when you can start to unite companies and organizations and stakeholders, you also realize the massive impact and the positive impact that it can have when you really bring everyone on this journey with you. So lots of lessons learned for sure. And looking at some of those challenges and some of the opportunities, I'm really starting to think about how do we do that in travel and tourism? What are some of the differences? What are some of the nuances that make it maybe different? But also, what are some of the great opportunities and lessons learned that really help catalyze some of this work more quickly?
I want to stay on this topic because you said something very interesting, which is very relevant to our podcast series. You pointed out that the sectors you've been working in are classic examples of ecosystems. And so we're really looking at ecosystemic dynamics. And one of your fields of expertise, one of your greatest abilities is exactly that of connecting the dots and building coalitions. Now, let's talk a bit more about this, because I realize it's intuitive that if you build a broader coalition, if more people get involved, you build scale. So more people do whatever they have to do, the impact will be larger. But I suspect there must be something more, right? In the interaction of the different players, there must be something more in how different solutions are discovered, arrived at, implemented. Talk a bit more about this.
Sure. And I'm happy to chat a little bit more maybe around the history and the origin of Cascale, because that might be something that maybe a lot of folks who listen to the podcast might not know about. And what's really interesting is that it started more than a decade ago when you had two really unlikely partners in the apparel sector, Walmart and Patagonia, come mm-hmm. together from a pre-competitive standpoint and talk about how the industry wasn't necessarily making as much progress as it wanted to, and that in order to really do that, they needed to bring companies together, right, from this pre-competitive standpoint. So each company was doing their own thing. They were often working in silos. And it wasn't that they weren't doing good things. It's just that it wasn't really moving the needle in the way that many wanted it to be. And so they came together and they actually invited a group of their peers. And when you get a letter from Patagonia and Walmart inviting you to a meeting, I think some of their peers early on said it was one of the strangest things that they had ever received, which is part of the reason they answered the call, right? Because at that time, these companies were not used to working together. That's not how they operated, right? They all operated from a competitive standpoint. And so this was really something that was very different and very unique at the time. And I still think is one of the key successes of Cascale, right? Which was actually saying, hey, there's a lot of things that we do compete on, but sustainability shouldn't be one of them. And so by bringing those competitors together to have this conversation around sustainability and what it meant to really standardize social and environmental metrics so that companies were really looking at these metrics and these impacts in the same way, like from an apples to apples comparison, as opposed to me doing it one way and you doing it another way. It was, okay, how do we align on what these metrics and these standards are? And then how do we go from there and build upon that, right? How do we all start measuring things in the same way so that we're looking at things consistently and then start to actually drive impact or reduce our impact, not just on a company basis, but also as an industry as a whole. And so to your point, I think that initial group of companies who came together saw the opportunity, right, to do more than they could as an individual company. And also to your point, really recognizing that if they wanted to drive systems change, they needed to do it together, right? Like no individual company was going to be able to solve these issues. And that it had to be about bringing everyone to the table. I think the other thing that was unique and really powerful about this was that it recognized that you had to bring the entire value chain to the table, right? So it couldn't just be brands and retailers leading the conversation. It had to be brands, retailers, manufacturers, other NGOs, other stakeholders, policymakers, et cetera. You really had to involve the entire ecosystem in the conversation around what this looked like and how we did it. And at the time, I think that was really unique. It was a unique way of looking at the problems and the challenges, but really seeing them as opportunities to drive change.
It's very interesting. And very concretely, in this, because the fact that it started as a joint project by Patagonia and Walmart, as you said, it's actually quite striking, quite unique. So what kind of priorities were set? How was the prioritization of concretely what we want to achieve?
Yeah, so first and foremost, it was really around standardizing sustainability metrics and tools, right? And that was essentially what became the HIG Index. And so the HIG Index is a suite of tools that measures social and environmental performance end to end, right? So it measures everything from the materials that go into a product. Mm-hmm. It measures how those products are made at a manufacturing level, and it measures the brand and retailer kind of performance and management, right? So it really looks at it holistically. And I think that was one of the powerful things about it, was that it wasn't looking at just materials or it wasn't looking at just manufacturing. It was saying, if companies really want to become more sustainable to reduce their impact, they needed to look at their business and their operations also end to end, right? So what materials are you purchasing and from where? How are you manufacturing those products and where are you manufacturing them and who are you working with? And then how are you kind of governed in terms of your own management practices, right? And so all of that was really important, and aligning on those different tools within the suite became essentially kind of how we prioritize looking at sustainability. And so bringing everyone together to discuss what are the various tools, what are the metrics that we're looking at, how do we actually measure what matters, right? So not data for data's sake, but actually saying, does this metric actually drive performance improvement, right? And so this suite of tools was really meant to be performance improvement tools. They were meant to help companies understand where are they now and how do they actually drive performance improvement year over year? And how do they use those tools to also have conversations with their partners, right? So brands and retailers talking to manufacturers and leveraging the data and insights to really understand what are the hotspots, what are the areas of opportunity, and how do we drive change? And so I think that we spent more than a decade building those tools and evolving those tools based on the best available science and how science kind of also evolves, but also now in terms of regulation and the regulatory landscape, looking at how do you actually start to collect the right data, not just from a reporting and a compliance perspective, but also ultimately to drive positive impact.
You hit on something that I can get very easily passionate about, which is the importance of having the right metrics and the right data, right? Because it's been some time now that we live in a society which is obsessed with data, but we tend to be obsessed with the quantity of data and the insights we think we can glean from the data, often without paying attention to what the quality of the data is. And that is crucial. So I was about to ask you how long it had taken to develop, and you said it took at least a decade of work to develop and fine-tune and agree on this method. So that's fascinating. Now, the next question I have on this is how widespread is the use of these metrics and this methodology at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, the use of the tools has grown. And I think to your earlier question around like how long it took, we started with, just to give everyone a sense, we started with an Excel spreadsheet, right? An Excel spreadsheet where we kind of pulled in all the various metrics that people thought were important to measure, et cetera. And they went through all of this testing and use and iteration, right, over time to get to where they are now. And now they're in versions, depending on the tool, they're in versions 3, 4, et cetera, right? So again, I think that what's really important is that the testing and the iteration of these tools and the constant updating of them to be not only relevant for kind of what we're trying to do or what organizations are trying to do, but also in terms of how the landscape is evolving, whether from a scientific standpoint or regulatory standpoint. And then what's really interesting is that evolution has been really important to start to glean the metrics that do drive performance improvement, right? So an example of saying, okay, well, a metric was included maybe in one version, but through that use and iteration, people realize like, that's actually not the right thing, right? Like that's not the thing that we want to measure. Actually, what we need to be looking at is the following. And so I think having that kind of constant process of engagement with companies who are leveraging the tools and using them also helped to increase the adoption of them, right? So you kind of start off with a group of companies who are piloting these tools and testing them, and then they start to become more widespread and they start to get used more often and they start to get scaled kind of across the value chain. And now there's more than 25,000 organizations using the tools across the global apparel and footwear sector.
And it's quite impressive. So I say that is quite an achievement. And I mean, you recently made the transition to the travel industry. So you're getting settled in, but are you beginning to see some interesting parallels and differences between your previous sector and your current field of industry?
Yeah, absolutely. What's really interesting is that I think that I have a lot of the sustainability background, but not the industry sector specific background. And so I've been over the past couple of months, I've been kind of in listen and learn mode, right? So really trying to learn, talk to as many partners and talk to as many stakeholders as I can to really understand where the travel and tourism sector is and how I might leverage some of the insights and the learnings from my work in apparel and footwear and really port that over and leverage it to help move the industry more quickly. Some of the things that are really interesting is that while there are specific nuances to travel and tourism that make it different, there's a lot of similarities, right? So making sure that you're bringing the right stakeholders along, having those diverse perspectives at the table is critically important. It seems like the travel and tourism industry is a bit more fragmented because what's fascinating about it is that you almost have different sectors within travel and tourism. So you have aviation, you have accommodations, right? You've got transport, like you have actually like mini like segments or subsectors within it. And each of those also need to be kind of dealt with differently because you do have different stakeholders and different partners within each of those sectors. So that's really fascinating. And then the data collection, where this industry is kind of in a similar place of saying, okay, how do we align on the data and the metrics and what really matters to really drive performance improvement? And so I would say, at least from my initial perspective, it seems like it's a sector that's a little behind where apparel and footwear is, but it also seems like there is a lot of opportunity and a lot of interest to start to build this kind of broader coalition of partners and stakeholders to really drive change. And I think it's coming at the exact right moment.
No, absolutely. Because it's a sector that it's at the intersection of so many trends that are relevant for everything from sustainability to productivity to economic growth to essentially, the melting of cultures across the world. So it really is a crucial sector. On this, I mentioned your new title at the beginning, but do you want to tell us a bit what your role entails? What are you responsible for? What are your goals?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm the new Chief Partnership and Development Officer at Travelist. And really, my role is to build this coalition. So I'm coming in at a time where, you know, the coalition, similar to actually how Cascale started, has started with a group of companies, right? Some of the biggest travel and tech companies around, Expedia, Booking, et cetera. And now they're at a bit of an inflection point where they've been around for 5 years and they're looking at what does that next 5 years look like? And how do you actually start to grow and scale this work and bring more partners along on this journey, as I mentioned? And so my role really is to help kind of expand that coalition of partners. It's to help deepen engagement with our existing partners. And it's also to really start to look at other industry bodies and other industry players and figure out how do we build that big tent? And how do we start moving and aligning our efforts to really drive change and catalyze change at scale? And that's the type of stuff that I, as you and I chat about, like that's the type of stuff that's really interesting to me is how do you build these coalitions to drive change and get partners on board with this journey? And how do you use that as an opportunity to really catalyze action?
You mentioned earlier the importance of regulation while we were talking about your previous experience in the apparel and footwear industry. And it strikes me that this might be even more relevant in the travel and tourism industry, given all the transportation sectors, aviation, everything that is involved. So what are your thoughts on the importance of collaboration between private and public sector, the role of regulation? And I guess especially given your perspective on building coalitions, on strategies or best practices for an efficient and constructive collaboration between public and private, for an efficient design of regulation. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think across both sectors, what I will say is that I think collaboration with policymakers and with regulatory frameworks is actually really important. And I think what is important is how you actually set up these public-private partnerships, how you actually drive change and how you have that conversation. Regulation is increasingly going to be a huge aspect of this work, whether you're talking about apparel or whether you're talking about travel and tourism, right? Regulation in the EU is right around the corner. And companies, irrespective of whether they want to or not, will have to comply with this regulation. And therefore, I think it's really important to be having those conversations with policymakers and to bring industry bodies and organizations like Travelist, along with partners and policymakers, to the table to be having those conversations in the round around, okay, well, what are we also ultimately trying to achieve, right? How do we do that? How do we actually craft smart policy that understands the nuance of a specific industry, but that also drives for performance improvement over time. As you and I chat, COP is happening now, and you have industry and governments and policymakers chatting about all of these things together in the round. And that's really important. And those dialogues are critical, I think, to be able to advance and to support industry to move forward in the best possible way. I would almost argue that you actually need more of that, not less of it, because you have these moments or snapshots in time. And yet what I think is really necessary, whether you're talking about it from just a company or an organizational perspective or a government perspective, is in order to solve these system-wide challenges, you need the system to come together, right? So you need business, you need the finance, you need policymakers, and you need to be having these conversations around what are we trying to do and how do we get there together? And so I'm a huge believer that these types of conversations are not just necessary, but absolutely critical to driving change.
So I want to be on the record for our audience to know that I'm on my best behavior, because as an economist, I've been several times on the record arguing that regulation is sometimes a necessary evil, often an unnecessary evil. So I tend to favor a minimalist approach to regulation. But even I realize that regulation is often essential. And that's why I think your perspective on how to foster the right dialogue, the right transparency, and the right attitude around the table so that we can have regulation that does what it should do, which is foster the common goals without and with sufficient cooperation and transparency so that we can minimize or mitigate, as they happen, the unintended consequences that inevitably arise, I think is
Yeah.
very important.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example of I have sat across the table from policymakers having this exact conversation to your point to say, okay, look, at the end of the day, we have kind of common end goals of where we're trying to get to, right? So let's have a conversation about where is an industry right now, what is possible, and how we actually move the needle to drive performance improvement over time. Because to your point, I do think that sometimes you have policy that isn't necessarily structured in the right way and has unintended consequences. And one aspect of that might be just a burden on a part of the supply chain that is not going to actually help and is not going to support the changes that are required, or over-indexing on just reporting without saying, why are we reporting? Or like, what data, what metrics are we collecting? Are those the right ones? And so I think, again, all of these are really important questions, but the only way to actually start to address them is to sit down across the table and have that conversation about what we're trying to achieve, and then leverage industry to say, where is it, right? What is best practice? What can you leverage and harness versus having it be one side or the other that's driving that change? I think it has to be a collaborative conversation.
I think this is exactly the right perspective. And by the way, on a similar note, both apparel and travel and tourism are industries which are by their very nature global. So we talked about the importance of having public and private actors around the table of the ecosystem approach. Here we're talking about an international dimension, which I imagine makes things even more complicated. So how much of an additional complication is it, and in your experience, what are the smart ways of managing it?
Yeah, I mean, with any kind of global industry, you have to take that global perspective into mind, right? And when you're dealing with partners, organizations, stakeholders, policymakers, whoever it is, I think it's really important to approach it with that perspective that they're all going to be different and they're going to approach the problems and the solutions, the challenges and the opportunities with a different lens. And so the way I think about it is trying to understand what that lens and what that perspective is, right? Because it is not a one size fits all. What works in one place might not necessarily work in another. And therefore, it's really important to understand what are the dynamics at play, right? What are the challenges that a particular organization or a stakeholder faces? What are they trying to achieve? And I think that by trying to really suss some of that out, it can help you to have a better conversation, right? It also builds trust, I think, and that is incredibly important because when you're trying to do this work, trust has to be kind of a foundation for it, right? You have to be sitting around the table and saying, okay, we might not see things necessarily like eye to eye or in the same way, but there's enough trust or there's enough kind of goodwill that's built up to have the dialogue and the conversation about how you arrive at solutions that ultimately meet common purpose. And so that's something that I think is really important, and that most of that stems from trying to build good relationships. And so if you can have those conversations and really understand where someone else, another organization or a stakeholder, et cetera, is coming from to our conversation around policy, like, okay, great, let's talk about what we're trying to achieve. Right. And that I think helps to figure out how you then find common ground. I used to say this in my old role all the time that I really believe that partnership is the new leadership. And really, the way to build partnership is to figure out how you find common ground across different and diverse actors.
I mean, it's very true. It also underscores the importance of the shared benefits that accrue from this, because I've been looking at it from the angle of, as an economist, the angle of global trade and globalization. And you hear that there's a lot of debate and there are a lot of recriminations against globalization. And of course, the way globalization has been managed has inevitably had a negative impact on some sectors of the workforce in some countries, including our own, the US, while benefiting enormously large number of workers in other countries. But what I find interesting is there's always a lot of talk about the breakdown of globalization, but when you look at the trends, it's not happening. It's transforming, it's mutating. But the fact is that global trade brings so many economic advantages to everybody that in the end, all companies and all governments, frankly, have an advantage and interest in working their way towards it. So I think recognizing this shared interest is also crucial to realizing that we have to bridge the cultural differences, the different preferences for regulations, because there is a very concrete, I talked about the economic angle, but of course the sustainability angle is equally important. There is a common interest at play. So,
yeah, and to that point, one of the interesting things that I've been learning about the travel industry is that while it does have a massive impact from an emissions perspective, almost 10% of global emissions, it's also one in 10 jobs globally, right? And so to your point around like, this is really, travel and tourism is a global endeavor, and therefore it is in everyone's best interest to really look at how we drive solutions together and understanding the impacts. And I think the sometimes very unequal impacts and where they are and figuring out how do you actually address those as an industry and as a sector.
It goes back to the point you made initially about data, right? It's understanding the impact, the costs and benefits, and therefore putting us in a position to make informed trade-offs. With your experience in apparel and now at the beginning of your experience and a lot of interest in travel and tourism, look more broadly. Are there any other industries and sectors where you think, oh, yes, obviously the same kind of approach would be relevant?
Yeah, I would say all of them. To be honest, I think that these, to your point around like every industry is essentially global, right? Mm-hmm. So if every industry is essentially global, then what we're talking about here in terms of how you actually address climate change or social justice, et cetera, like these things are also global in nature. And so, and we talked about how many of these industries are very connected, right? So when you're talking about travel and tourism, you're not really just talking about travel and tourism or just apparel or just footwear, right? You're talking about everything from the built environment to finance to all of it. And so I think what we do need to realize is that these things are global in nature. They are interconnected, and therefore industries should be looking at how they actually work together from a pre-competitive standpoint to understand the issues and the challenges and drive change. One of the interesting things is that kind of in between my role at Cascale and now at Travelis, I spent some time just talking to folks in other industries, whether it's biopharma or consumer goods or others, who were really interested in learning some of the lessons from apparel and footwear and how they were able to translate them. And those are really fascinating conversations to have, right? Because you do realize that, yes, there are differences between some of these industries, and yet there's a lot of similarities and a lot of lessons learned. So like, I highly encourage all industries to take a look at what are the opportunities for collaboration? How do you deepen that, not within that industry or sector in and of itself, but also how do you look to learn lessons from other sectors and other industries who have either done this and done it well or who are also on that journey? I think there's a lot to be learned there.
I could not agree more. Amina, I want to go back to your background now. We said we were going to do this at the beginning, and then I'm very curious. So you studied and you practiced architecture before moving into sustainability. In fact, you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that besides your interest in the social impact, it's through architecture that you began to develop an interest in sustainability. And so how has your background and training as an architect influenced your approach to the work you're doing now?
Yeah, it's funny because often when people find out that I started in architecture, they don't really understand the linkage. How did you get from where you started to where you are? And I recognize that it on paper, it might look a little strange, but you know, to the point I mentioned around why I got into architecture and sustainability to begin with, and the social aspect, I think, is one part of it. But what I love about the study of architecture is it's design and systems thinking, right? So when you're creating something and when you're working on a project, you actually have to really understand the entire system. You don't design something beautiful and then it gets built. It's a lot of conversation and a lot of work. And you have to be able to look at things both from a detailed perspective to the entire picture, right? You need to understand what is the whole project, the whole building look like, all the way down to sometimes the very minutia details that you're designing in terms of how a doorway is constructed or how a door meets a wall, right? And so that ability to be able to zoom in and out, I think, is really critical when you're talking about systems work. You have to be able to see the systems as a whole, but you also have to be able to go it, zoom in and see a particular part of the system that needs work. And sometimes when I meet people, they can do one or the other, but sometimes they're not great at doing both. And architecture is one of those professions that you're required to do both. You have to be able to do both in order to be successful. So I will say, first and foremost, I think that is a really interesting lesson learned from my background. The other thing is that you're working on project interdisciplinary project teams all the time, right? So it's not just architects working with other architects. You're working with architects and structural engineers and mechanical engineers and everyone who's involved in a project. And therefore, you're constantly having to work together with other disciplines and understand where they're coming from, and they have to understand where you're coming from, right? And so that ability to have those conversations to say, okay, great, what's the problem here? Like, what are we trying to fix? Like, what's the solution? It is in interdisciplinary by nature, and it forces you to actually understand another perspective and a point of view that you might not have, right? So like a concrete example of saying, you're trying to design something beautiful, and then the structural engineer says, that's not possible. And then you have to be like, okay, well, tell me why. And anyone who comes from an architecture background will know what I'm talking about when I say those types of conversations, or someone puts a mechanical duct right through your perfect design, and they're like, it has to go there. And so it's all about, how do you negotiate and how do you try to stay true to ultimately the overall design and what you're trying to do with the very real aspects of building a building and making sure that it functions in the way that it needs to function. And so those types of things of like, how do you think about design thinking and how do you think about the overall system, how you work with others? There's so many lessons learned, I think, from my architectural background that I carry forward. Not necessarily in terms of architecture specifically, but I think of the way the profession works and how you actually have to work with others, right? And then you have to be open to like change and iterate. Sometimes you'll be on a building site and something's not working the way that you drew it. And that's because the very real world does not necessarily always manifest like it does on paper, right? And so you have to be willing to actually adapt and make changes. And you have to be willing to say, okay, great, this is not working. Let's change it. Let's figure it out and let's move forward. And I think that lends itself really well to the work in sustainability, right? Is that you can have a goal and an idea of where you're trying to get to, but you have to learn to really be able to shift and to iterate as you go. I was just chatting with someone about strategy, and I think a strategy is like sailing. You kind of know where you're starting and you generally know where you want to end up. But a lot of things can happen along the way, right? And so you have to be able to be adaptive and you have to be able to tack in different ways. And sometimes things will blow you off course and you have to figure out how do you course correct and move forward. And so all of those things are really important, to be agile and to be iterative, because a lot of what we're trying to do hasn't necessarily been done before. And therefore, we can have a sense of how we might want to get there, but you have to have those conversations with other stakeholders. You have to figure it out. And I think you have to be willing to change.
Yeah, you make a very good point. And I think the way you drew the parallels between architecture and the architectural work and the way it builds a muscle for ecosystemic cooperation, interdisciplinary cooperation, I think it's very powerful. So I think everybody will be convinced that you have the right background for this. Now, Amina, this is a podcast we run in collaboration with NASA. And so part of what we do is trying to look ahead. And what you're doing is helping to change the way the very important sectors and industries do what they do. So driving fundamental changes. So if we look ahead, say 10, 20 years, what does an ideal state of sustainability across industries look to you? What does it look like? What does it take to get there? And what are the consequences if we fail to get to this ideal state we should be tending to?
Yeah, well, I will say I'm a pragmatic optimist. So my hope is that we do get there. And my hope is that we get there through real deep collaboration, not just sector by sector, but actually across sectors, right? And I think we're starting to see more and more of that happening. But what I will say is my concern is the pace at which it's happening. And so in an ideal world, you do have sustainability start to become embedded in how business works and business models and really kind of thinking that through. Because if it's not embedded, if it's just kind of a standalone as it has been for some time and in some places, it's never going to really be fundamental and foundational to how businesses work. And so I'm a huge proponent that you have to really start to integrate some of this into the business itself. It can't be a standalone. It really has to be integrated into the business from the start, from the get-go. And companies and businesses have to figure out how they do that. I think regulation is only going to continue. So you'll start to see this push and pull, this tension, right, between sustainability and companies and where regulation is headed. And the hope is that that can be used as an opportunity to drive the kinds of actions that we really need if we're going to address the worst impacts of climate change. I think that if companies and stakeholders and policymakers don't figure out how to collaborate and collaborate well and deeply across these sectors, then we're going to see the impacts of climate change and how it ravages our planet and the people and the places that we love most, right? So my goal and my role here at Travelist and just in general is to figure out how we continue to move forward and how we do this work and how we bring as many organizations and stakeholders along this journey with us.
One final question for you, something I'm very curious about, because you've been trying to do, or you are trying to do something which is new and novel in industries which are very complex. So do you want to share any of the most surprising moments or challenges that you've encountered along the way?
Yeah, what I will say is I kind of reflect on my time working in sustainable fashion and as I kind of move into this new industry is that we know how to do so much of this stuff, right? This is not a matter of not having the technology to move things forward. It's not a matter of innovation. It's not really a matter of even honestly the funding or the financing. Like it exists, right? So what's really missing is the will and the collaborative, what I will call the collaborative will to do these things. And I think that's understandable, right? You have companies, you've got policymakers, you've got a lot of different stakeholders who each have their own thing that they're trying to do and that they're trying to achieve. And I get that. At the same time, we will not be able to address the climate crisis unless we actually get out of our own way to some degree, right? And that means learning to let go of things. And that is very hard, right? So I will say that I don't really think that this is a technology problem. I think we've got tons of smart, very creative people that for the things that we don't know how to do, they can be solved. I think the financing exists. You do need to connect the dots between it. And I think there is policy that can kind of help. But again, I think it, to our earlier conversation, it really kind of needs to work in harmony with what is there. It's really a people thing, right? Is how do we actually get people to collaborate and to collaborate well and to learn to kind of let go of certain things for the greater good and focus, right? In the nonprofit space, I will say there's tons of organizations and they're all doing great work. But what I really like to think about is how do we actually get them all working together? So not as individual silos doing their own thing, but actually working in partnership where you do part of it and I do part of it, but collectively together, we actually can do more. And that's what I think is really necessary here is kind of understanding the roles that different organizations play and figuring out how you actually bring them together in a way that drives change much more quickly and in partnership with one another.
That's almost a fantastic note to end on, I would say. But first, before I let you go, Amina, is there anything we haven't covered, anything we've missed, or any parting thoughts and lessons you would like our audience to take away?
I mean, we've covered a lot, but I'll just end on this fact that I really do believe that partnership is the new leadership. And that's, I think, what the world needs right now. I love this conversation around looking at the ecosystem and how you solve systemic challenges. And the only way to do that is actually bring the whole system together. So from my vantage point and the work that I do and will continue to do, it's really going to be focused on that. How do you bring partners and other players to the table to drive change? And I would just encourage everyone out there to think through within their own remit of wherever you sit across the value chain, whatever sector you sit in, I think thinking about how you do that within your role, and how those opportunities can drive just incredible change for us across every sector. So I'll end with that.
I think it's a perfect call for action. Amina Razvi of Travelist, thank you so much for being on our podcast. This was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marco. It was so wonderful to be here.
And thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Please do check out this season's new episodes as we explore the convergence of innovation, technology, and refactor business models, and how this convergence is reshaping industry and what it means for ecosystemic futures. Follow us, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever your favorite place for podcasts is, and you can always learn more or apply to be a guest speaker at shoshinworks.com. Thanks, everybody.